Everybody, welcome to the Speakeasy Podcast. My name is Kate.
And my name is Alan, and we are from ReverseThieves.com, a cool anime and manga blog that talks about all kinds of cool stuff, or one day it will again.
Yeah, I was like, it's a blog that just hosts this podcast.
If you would like to contact us, you can send us an email at ReverseThieves.com or leave us a comment. In fact, one of the segments in this episode will be because someone left a comment and I was like, I will. Well, partially because I was supposed to talk about it in the last podcast, but I give the whole story about that in the comments. But it is definitely in this episode because of popular one person request.
Yeah, and so this episode is kind of a, I don't know, it's a catch-all, just a lot of some new shows that we've been watching, and, you know, just some various stuff that we have watched recently. So I think it's all technically new, so.
A lot of it is us kind of finishing the season, like, review, or, like, season preview, even though the season's almost over.
I know. I was actually looking at the spring chart. So, you know, I'm sure that will be next month's episode. But yeah, so just a lot of different things and, you know, some TV shows, some movies, some ongoing things. So I think we should just dive right in to probably the most energetic show of the season. I have not watched all other shows. But I feel confident that Tropical Rouge Precure, the new installment of the Precure franchise, might be the most energetic show I've ever watched. It actually makes me kind of tired.
You know, I have some important thoughts about it, but I'm going to let us get... I don't want to sidetrack us too much right out of the start. Let's describe what this new Precure is about, and then I could go into my important long-time Precure fan thoughts, which I have.
So, in this new series, we are following Manatsu, who is from a small island that she's living on with her father. And she is about to start middle school, and her mom asks for her to come and live with her on the sort of the mainland. But it's still a seaside city. And her mom works at the aquarium. And so, you know, Manatsu is, if nothing else, game for anything. She's just ready to, you know, no challenge is too much for her. Nothing is, you know, I feel like she's ready for some adventure. And so she takes off for the city. She starts her new life by meeting a mysterious mermaid who is looking for the Precure for her own reasons, I guess you could say. And Manatsu becomes a legendary warrior while also making friends and starting school and being generally the most enthusiastic character of all time.
By the way, Kate, the themes for this Precure are tropical and ocean themes, cosmetics, and the kind of balance between motivation and procrastination.
That's a good point about the enemies in here, which like sap people's motivation. And I was thinking so much about when I was watching this, about this show kind of coming at this time of COVID and like I don't know. I just was wondering if, even if it's subconsciously, there's some things in here about not procrastination necessarily, but like feeling so depleted and feeling just no motivation to do things because of the way the world is. And then to have that contrasted with such an energetic show, and I feel like it's maybe just in response to kind of how the world is feeling. It was like, this show is like really get up and go. Like the opening is, it feels like the opening is on 1.5 speed. Like it's so, there's just so much, there's so much energy.
I mean, this is an old meme that like maybe only the oldsters who listen will remember. But when I saw the opening, all I could remember is the old anime meme of, is this a dancing anime? Because they're all doing the hula dance and various and all the other characters are doing various dances throughout the opening.
So much dancing, so much spirited energy. Like I said, it kind of makes me like Manatsu is, and I feel like we've had energetic lead characters before, but she takes the cake, guys, honestly. Like, pure happy, not even close to how much, Manatsu is like.
It's like she just drank three Red Bulls filled with pixie sticks and then came out on the show.
I think it's sort of working because the other characters counterbalance that, I think, a bit, which is good because if everybody was that excited about life, I don't know if I could handle it. But luckily, Laura, the mermaid, is like very opposite. Like I feel like she's very cynical. And has much more of a like pragmatic point of view. She's like, look, we need to find some precure. I want to become the queen. There is like, get on it. Like, you need to care about the X, Y, and Z. Stop getting distracted by having fun, liking school, and like wanting to go to that cafe or that shop with cute things in it.
But at the same time, Laura's kind of a slacker piece of garbage who wants to become queen but doesn't want to work too hard to become queen. And if other people could do the work for her, even better.
Yeah, I'm actually wondering if like, I think there's a normal assumption that like Laura, I think, will become a precure, but I'm also kind of wondering if she might get corrupted because she has a bit of the like, yeah, she doesn't, I don't feel like she wants to do the work, and I feel like the enemy, right, is sort of about like, oh, do it later, or like, so I wonder if there that will, if that will come into play in the story.
I mean, so I was going to mention, before I get into discussing Laura, I just wanted to go back a little bit and go, I was thinking about Precure and like what I was going to say in this podcast. And we were also having a little discussion before we started recording. And I feel like, I think you're onto something about COVID, because I feel like, especially in the last few years, a lot of Precure has been kind of like subtle, like little social messages that kind of go under the. I mean, I think we talked a lot about it in Star Twinkle and A La Mode of like them touching on topics that like might get like more pushback if it was on a different show, but since it's Precure, it goes under the radar. And like, I think they've brought up stuff that could easily argue them talking about like queer or even trans topics in previous Precures. So I feel like if the staff wanted to subtly talk about COVID stuff without bringing up COVID, wouldn't be out of the question for a Precure series, in my humble opinion.
I actually thought that they were going to bring it up more in the previous one because the previous one is all about like being a doctor and the sickness of the earth and all kinds of things, but
So I don't think that people who listen to this podcast so dedicatedly know my opinion on every Precure series. I'm not the kind of internet celebrity that people would, there are certain people who, like, everybody remembers their everyone and everything. So if people don't remember my thoughts on Precure 5, it's understandable. So I'll restate them. That, like, I really, Precure 5 is like the first one that has like a team of Precures, not just two Precures. But I really loved that series because there was this one character called Milky, or who eventually becomes known as Milky Rose, who was like just a complete piece of garbage mascot. Like, when you first meet her, she pretends to be like a stuffed animal so she can, because she comes from like the fairy world and she doesn't know how to get food or a job. So she just pretends to be a stuffed animal so kids will bring her home and then she can rob their houses of food and material she needs until she runs out of that stuff and then pretends to be a stuffed animal again. And then they find her and they like tisk her and she's like, "Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know what to do. I'll never do it again." And they're like, "All right, Milky Rose, that's fine." And then she like turns to the camera like, "Ha, ha, ha, I fooled those fuckers. I would do it again." And that pretty much sums up how Milky Rose event, like, they soften her and she learns lessons, but she's still kind of a piece of shit by the end of the series. I mean, at one point, since they're both in love with the same mascot guy, she tries to get the main girl killed at one point. So, this is the kind of character that Milky Rose is. And I looked it up. Precure 5 was two seasons, and it ended in 2009. So it's been over a decade since they've had a Milky Rose character. And I am super hype that, in my opinion, Laura is kind of a Milky Rose character. Just this kind of toxic friend to the main character who's definitely got her own selfish goals. But I mean, like, Milky Rose bonded with people and, she has moments and, like, points of connection with the other Precures. And I feel like Laura, already in the first three episodes, has had like moments of humanity or mermaid maybe. But I kind of enjoy that they've brought back kind of a total shitbag character for the Precures to know. But I don't feel like she's someone you kind of like to hate, or at least like to find that they're that kind of character. She isn't like, "All right, let's get Milky Rose off, let's get Laura off the screen." I feel like she's kind of delightful in that manner.
Yeah, I mean, I really think she's fun. I think she's scheming, but she's not unlikable. Not that you need to have likable characters all the time, but and I don't know if I feel like you put it a little extremely. I don't know if
Well,
she's
Milky
like
Rose
a
was kind of a lot
horrible,
worse.
horrible, like.
Milky Rose was a lot worse than Laura, but I like that they've kind of, I feel like, because there was the one from Hugtow. You know who I'm talking about. I can't remember her name because it's friggin' Hugtow. But she was more just like an idiot. Whereas, Laura's a schemer, and I like that they've brought back that, it's been a while, so I'm very glad that they've brought back like the schemer mascot character. Because like if they had like a schemer mascot like every other season, like you know the studious blue Precure, I think it would kind of wear out its welcome. But like I said, it's been over a decade, so I'm like really hyped to see a new schemer mascot.
Yeah, I think I agree. I agree with you, Al. I think it's not overused, so I think it's fun, and I think we have some characters that feel a little different this time around, and I think that, you know, that feels fresh and keeps it interesting. I do feel like the show feels a little more like a like Aikatsu territory. Like it's like going, I don't know, it's not, you know, nobody's idols or anything like that, but I do feel like maybe it's because of also like the makeup and fashion aspects of it that make it feel like a little different than some of the previous Precures. I don't know yet how I feel about the like cosmetics angle of the show. It's a little like on the one hand, so far they have only ever used cosmetics to feel like empowered and like motivated, and it's never been about like I don't look good or like I need to look good for like other people or boys or like anything outside of like this is fun for me to do and that's why I want to do it, and that's very important.
Yeah, it felt very much like the kind of vibe you'd get from like a makeup tutorial video of like let's put on our makeup to like feel good about ourselves and like, you know, almost like our war paint or like boost our confidence kind of thing, more than like I'm gonna, yeah, like you said, I'm gonna attract somebody with, or like I was ugly but now I'm pretty. It's more like, you know, let's get motivated with our makeup. So,
Yeah, or
yeah.
like game face. This is my, you know, like I feel empowered when I put on this, you know, this lipstick that my mom that like reminds me of my mom or whatever. So yeah, I think they just have to keep that balance, you know, and be careful with that a little bit. But like so far, I think that the messaging on that has been, I mean, obviously Precure has a very like buy our shit, aspect to it. So of course that is a component of it. So it's not like free of a commercialism of that, but I feel like, you know, the messaging about why you might want to wear makeup has been okay. I'm interested to see, we've only met two characters. We actually haven't even, or sorry, three characters. We actually haven't even met the other two characters that are in the opening, which I is so unusual, I think, because we haven't even seen them. Like, I'm my guess is that they are older, and they're not in the same class. That's my guess, is that they're probably in middle school, but maybe they're because the Manatsu and Sango are first years, so I'm wondering if the other two characters are second or third years in middle school, and that's why we haven't seen them yet. But I don't know. But I'm interested to see them just because I want to see the various points of view about makeup. Like I hope that like there's just different opinions and different ways. Like there's so many characters here, so like hopefully there's just differing ways that people view it. Also, I really want the yellow Precure to show up because in the opening she shoots laser beams out of her eyes. So I'm like, well, that seems cool.
Oh, just randomly also when like you have to go into deep Precure lore. I think this is the first Precure since the first one where the main cure's major color wasn't pink. Minatsu's major color is white, which is a big It's like an interesting twist, because I think since the original Precure, the main Precure's color is always pink. Like what the other characters are is always different, and we've had all difference. But this is like the first one since the first one, because it was just pure black and white, where her color wasn't pink.
Yeah, it feels like there's a lot of different or just that they're doing a lot of different things.
I don't know how twisty you found this, but I was a little surprised that this isn't spoilers. I mean, I guess it kind of is, but that Sango was like so had so little like her major thing seems to be like a lack of self-confidence, because she seemed like usually it's the super shy girl in Precure who's the one who doesn't have like a lot of confidence. And like when they introduce her, she's got lots of friends and she seems super outgoing. So I thought like her deal like was going to be different. So I was like a little surprised that when we get to her episode in the third episode, like, and this is not unheard of. I mean, I'm sure plenty of people know people like this who like put on this gregarious and like try to be everybody's friend because they're lacking in self-confidence. So I was like pleasantly surprised that that was her like arc, and like her thing in her episode is like she like feels like she always has to go along, not because like everybody's bullying her, but because she doesn't want to be the one, she doesn't want to be the nail who sticks out. And she like at least is beginning to learn to like express her own opinions. By the end of the third episode, I thought that was interesting.
Another good difference. I liked that. I wasn't expecting that either. And I also liked that. I liked the messaging there, which was basically like, it was kind of like own your own. Like, I mean, in this case, it was like, if you think that's cute, because it was all about like, hey, is this fish cute? Is this bracelet cute? Is this, flower cute or whatever? And it was like, own whatever. Like, if you think this is cute, just like say so, like own it, like don't, like. And I liked, again, I liked the message in there of like, if you like it, then that's fine and that's good. And like, yeah, I think like I like where they're going with things in here so far. And again, I just think it's a little bit different from some previous seasons, so.
Plus, like you said, as much as I may have like compared her to Milky Rose, it's Laura who actually teaches Sango that. I mean, it's also kind of self-serving because Sango said that Laura was cute, so she's like, "No, I am cute, so you've got to own that mermaids are cute." But
I
I
mean,
mean, it,
Manatsu also
yeah.
encourages her to like, 'cause she is, she's like, "Oh, you always say what you think, like whatever, even when you like nobody else agrees, you say." So like, yeah. A couple other things I want to mention about the show. One, not sure about the monster design yet, okay? So we've had like a table, a recycling bin, like work on it, everybody. Work on it.
Yeah, it is definitely one of those. I know people like I don't remember what they called the lazy town generals, but yeah, the actual monsters that they summon are pretty mediocre.
Yeah, no, the generals are great, and like I know that again, watching the opening, really want to find out about that shrimp maid. Like, just got very interested in all of these characters. I
People
can't wait
also
for them to
seem to
show
really
up.
like the evil seahorse doctor.
It should be really good. I'm, but they need to work on what exactly is being turned into a monster.
Yeah.
The first episode was fine because it was like, whatever, like the rugby team or whatever it was. But yeah, for whatever reason, past that, they were like inanimate objects, and I'm like, no, go. You had it right the first time. Stop. And then also just wanted to call out that the writer credited for this show is also the writer of Free. Just wanted to throw it out there. So don't know if we'll get any swimming boys, but seems like you could throw some in. I mean, seaside town, mermaids, aquariums, you know.
Yeah, I'm very looking forward to seeing how the show shapes up. It definitely, as long as they keep Laura entertaining, and I will continue to watch. So, when we were doing the last episode, which was our like look at the new shows of the winter season, I remembered about halfway through that I had watched Other Side Picnic, but it was going late and I could kind of sense that Kate was like, she wasn't like falling asleep, but like throwing another show on the pile would be, in my opinion, a little cruel. So I'm like, I'll just save like other, I'll like mention Other Side Picnic in the next episode. But then someone was like, hey, you guys didn't talk about Other Side Picnic. And I was like, ah, damn it. All right, I'll talk about it in this episode, definitely now. But yes, Other Side Picnic was a show that I watched. And so, like, I think the next episode's the last episode of the season. So,
Whoops.
but let's talk about Other Side Picnic. Apparently it's based on a series of Yuri science fiction novels that's inspired by the novel Roadside Picnic. And it's about these two girls who, for various reasons, find a way to enter this other world called the Other Side that just seems to be inhabited by creatures that are very similar to creatures from Japanese internet related urban legends, especially like internet specific urban legends. One of the girls is Sorowo, and so far, like I read in the Wikipedia a little more information, but so far we don't exactly know how she got dragged to the other side, but she is very knowledgeable about urban legends, especially internet urban legends. And then the other girl who initially saves her, because she's, when we first meet Sorowo, she's drowning in a puddle that, like, it looks like it's just like, like not even foot deep, but it's like a whole ocean. And she's like, well, I guess I'm gonna die here. And then Toriko comes in and saves her. And Toriko, she had a mentor who showed her how to get into the other side, and she's gone missing. So when Toriko was in there, she was like on another dive in there, trying to find her mentor, and instead she meets Sorowo, and they've kind of like teamed up. And they're both college students, which is they are deliberately in college because they often go drinking together. So they are above the the Japanese drinking age. And they kind of fund their expeditions into the other side and their college tuition by bringing back artifacts to this wealthy collector from the other side. And Toriko is kind of seeking her mentor, and it implied that she maybe had some kind of relationship or at least crush on her mentor. And Sorowa is in it because she is interested in Toriko, because she's this beautiful blonde, half Canadian, adventurer. Which I find interesting that, like, I don't know if this is a trend or I was like thinking about it today of like how also we have the half Canadian from Skate the Infinity. And I was like, is that like the new half American thing? Like, they're like, I want my character to be half from North America, but America's kind of gotten toxic over the last few years, so I'll make them half Canadian.
That'll be more fun.
Or is this just the coincidence that we have two half Canadian characters this season? I claim in no way to know enough about like Japanese social trends. I just wanted to point out that we've had two half Canadian characters this season. And so, yeah, every time is like every episode or like two-part episode has been them going in and exploring a part of the other side, and then, their frantic trip back, like trying to get back. And so, I don't know, I'm not sure what my feelings are on this show, because it's like one interesting thing that I feel like is going to be divisive and is going to very much either make some people really love this show or really hate this show is this show very clearly does not want to flesh out everything, like how the other side works, how these monsters that they meet work, how the objects in the other side work. It seems very deliberate. And because they're all based on popular or like and I po possibly unpopular or like obscure Japanese internet urban legends, but they're all their own takes on them. Because like Sawara will mention what she knows of it, and then you'll see their twist on it. But it's very clear that they like introduce it, show their twist, and then there's no like explanation. And I know enough about horror fans that I know there's a distinct group of horror fans that really hate when series, especially like a series that starts out ambiguous, like by the fourth or fifth sequel, has like gone into everything and explains everything in detail. And I know there are a bunch of horror fans who super hate when that happens. And like, clearly, this show is catering to that. Like, here's the thing, and how does it work, and what's the, full explanation? And I feel like there's a certain group of people that feel like, oh, like, it's more scary or more interesting when they don't explain everything in detail. And so I feel like it's definitely catering to that, but I feel like that could be divisive. And also, at times I feel like show, do you know what your tone is? Like, even the opening will have that, because sometimes they'll be like there's very clearly, like, if you look at the opening, there's one part where, like, there's this spooky ghost chasing them down these spiral staircases, and they're almost running and have like a reaction when the ghost catches up to them, like it's a Scooby-Doo episode. They're like, and they're jumping together, and then they meet the ghost, like, jumps down, and they're woo! And it feels Scooby-Doo. But there's also in the opening, and I don't want to spoil too much, but this has to be, like, I have to show, like, they eventually meet a platoon of American soldiers that was doing training, and they get stuck in the other side. And, like, they've been slowly losing members, and they had this, like, robot, kind of just like very simple robot that would carry their stuff, and it got corrupted into this robot that, like, captures the members of the platoon and hangs them in body bags as it captures more and more, and they just swing, screaming as it hunts down other members of the remaining platoon. And that's also in the opening. And I'm like, do you actually know what tune you have, show? Because you had both of them. Sometimes in the same episode of, like, oh, here's this guy who's looking for his lost wife, and I'm not sure that he was ever married. Is he just imagining his lost wife because he's gone mad? Or did he have a lost wife? And that's never explained. And, like, but there are also silly jokes in that same episode. So, like, there are some tonal shifts in episodes.
But I feel like you're saying that you don't feel like it works. 'Cause I mean, some things, you know.
It doesn't ruin it, but, like, because I've stated in the past, and I think we've both stated in the past, that sometimes you can mix horror and comedy and other things, and it works. And it doesn't ruin it, but it sometimes they're not. Sometimes they pull it off, and other times I feel like the goofiness and horror kind of clashes with each other. And some episodes will be very silly, and other episodes will be super serious. And, like, maybe it's one of those things that works better in the novel. Maybe it's one of those things where it's like it's in the novel and the anime does its best to smooth it over, and it, you know, it's as jarring in the novel. I don't know. The novels have been licensed, so that might be a question that a reader could a listener could answer. But
I mean, I feel like the other possibility is like it changes from novel to novel. Like, okay, this is a silly novel, and like this is a serious one or whatever. But I think what you're stating out, like, I think that humor absolutely belongs in horror because like gallows humor and like how you get through things, like that's all there. But I think what you're saying sounds like to me, you. The way that the humor is being used makes it unclear what the stakes are, because it's like if an encounter can be that silly, I don't know, like it feels like it's not just like humor between the characters making a joke. It's like I don't know whether an encounter is serious or silly.
Like, the part with the, like, the US platoon is pretty serious. And when, and like one or two of the other serious episodes, it's the ones where it's a little more mixed, where I feel like it makes the, like, definitely the one that I remember, like, worked the least is they go into this town of big head monsters, and, like, it's serious. And then there's, like, a whole goofy section in the middle. And then, like, they're pretty sure the big head monsters are going to kill them, and they barely get away from them. But, like, the impact of their chase away from the big head monsters murdering them is definitely loose, like, definitely lessened by all the goofiness in the middle. And there are one or two other episodes like that. And so, yeah, when it works, when it doesn't, I really feel like it's jarring. Also, I have a weird speculation that Saguaro is actually, the Toriko's mentor is actually a alternate timeline version of Saguaro, because they mention, like, several people who have met her mentor mentioned that she kind of looks like Saguaro, who just is taller and has long hair, but is also kind of like a creepy manipulator. And I wonder if it's like, and apparently Saguaro is super jealous of, like, of it. I think it would kind of be interesting if the girl that she's super jealous of is just her from, like, and there also seems to be hints that, like, her mentor has kind of been manipulating things to get them together, almost like, I met her in my timeline a different way, so I'm going to get this version of her together with Toriko, which I think is interesting. I don't, nothing I've read says that, but that's just my interesting theory about the show. Also, I was like, I heard it was a Yuri series, and I was like, I didn't really get too much. And, like, by the second, I see what you're saying here. But, so, I mean, I guess if you're in it for the Yuri aspect, that might, but yeah, there's things to like about the show, but there are definitely flaws in it as well. And, it definitely seems like a to taste show. Like, there are definitely certain people, like, I was shocked that when I listened to, like, the last Anime World Order, that Gerald had never heard of this series. I'm like, man, this seems like a show that would be way up his alley. Whereas, like, I don't think, like, this doesn't seem like a Kate series. I definitely feel like there are certain people I would recommend this show, and other people are like, yeah, you don't have to.
And where do you stand, Al?
I'm definitely gonna, like, finish this season, especially since I kind of want to see how this last storyline ends, and then I'll kind of determine how much I'll continue on. But it definitely has merits. It definitely, I do find it intriguing that it definitely doesn't want to, like, it refuses to explain everything. But, yeah, it is definitely a flawed show.
Okay, so I wanted to take a chance to talk a little bit about Detective Conan. I occasionally, bring it up. But this time, they just passed the 1,000th episode of the anime TV series. And so for episode 1000, and actually 1001, it was a two-part episode, they actually reanimated the Moonlight Sonata murders, which are a case from the first season, and it's also from the manga, and I think it's, very well known with Conan fans. You know, it's a popular one, I think. It certainly is with me. So I was very excited to see that it wasn't just that they were re-airing it, because they do that a lot of re-airing old episodes, but they actually reanimated the story.
Didn't they, for another anniversary or special occasion, reanimate, like, the first episode?
Yes. So they did the special of, like, the origin story. They've done that as well. So yeah, I was very excited to see this. So I also rewatched the original version after watching the new version, just to refresh myself and see, you know, was there really any differences, and you know, what kind of takeaway I got from like the original versus the newer one. So I think one of the reasons maybe this, the for those who have never actually dived into Conan, you know, it's intimidating or there's too many episodes or you just don't care or whatever. The original, the beginning of Conan is like, and Al has watched, you know, we've watched through the first season specifically, but like, it's like a little darker than, I mean, obviously Conan solves a lot of murders throughout his 1,000 episodes, but like, I feel like the first season especially, and like the beginning of the manga, I don't know, there's just like a little more of a grisly nature to the goings on. And so this story is no exception. It's like, but it's like got everything, and it's got everything that I love. So it takes place in, it's a closed loop. Right, they have to go to an island. They get a mysterious letter summoning them to this island to, like, you know, solve this case. And then when they get there, they find out that the person who allegedly like wrote the letter has been dead for like over a decade, and they died in this super creepy way playing the Moonlight Sonata on the piano while the fire raged and burned the house down around them. And so it's like, and so then, you know, people start dying in the modern day, and Conan and Kogoro and Ron are there on the island, and they have to figure out like, how is this connected to the death in the past, and like, what's going on currently? And it's got revenge and suicide and drug cartels and, you know, serial killings. I mean, it's just like, in secret identities, and it's a lot to cram into like a 1 hour special. But it's, yeah, it's just like really, you know, it's just got a lot of like really good pulpy mystery murder stuff. Few interesting things about the 1,000th episode version of this. So first, the original is like episode, I think it's episode 11. Near, you know, you're talking nearly 1,000 episodes apart for practically. So they didn't update it in that like characters don't have cell phones. Like, one of the major components to this mystery is like tape recorders and like how tape recorders work. And like, so they didn't change any of that. They didn't like try to bring it in, which I think would actually have been very interesting. And like, if they tried to modernize it, like how that would have worked, maybe would have been kind of cool to see. But so they didn't do any of that. And the newer episodes have a shorter time count for the length of the episode. So the original 1 hour special, which aired as a 1 hour special, is 48 minutes long, including an opening and an ending. And then the new 1000 episode and 1001 were split into two episodes. So it wasn't aired as a special. And it's 46 minutes, but it also has two openings, two endings, preview for each one. And then the beginning of Conan episodes also recaps what happened in the previous episode. So I didn't get like an exact number, but like, you're still, they were there. The newer one is shorter. Like, it has a shorter time limit. So I thought that that was interesting. And so when I was going back and watching the original, like, I still enjoyed the new one, but the original is still better in a couple of ways. There's a couple of, like, little scenes that I think do add to the story a little bit and make things a little more clear, and they're not in the newer version, clearly cut for time. And also, it's weird, but, like, the old version, I don't think it's just the fuzziness of old, you know, like 90s aired cartoons, but the old version has a little bit more atmosphere. And actually, I think that's sort of what I was getting at about also like early Conan. It has a little bit more of like a darker atmosphere overall to the stories and just kind of the way that it is framed. And so I feel like that atmosphere was a little bit lost in the slicker new version of Conan. And so like it just has a little bit of a creepier vibe in the original that I was missing a little bit in the new one. So still definitely recommend it. It's a ride. And like I do find like the solution is like so dramatic, like the, you know, the confrontation at the end and like how it all is just like really, I feel like it really gets me. It's you know, it's absurd, but it's great. So yeah, so while I was like excited about the new one, going back and watching the old one, I feel like it's still really, that's the version, that's the true version that should be seen. And then just last thing I want to mention about episode 1000. So episode 1000 has new opening song. They did not have the new opening animation yet. So, and then the next episode 1002 is a re-airing of an old episode. So still won't have a new opening yet. But the new opening song is called Zero. So, like, I was like, you couldn't even write a song. Like, you couldn't write a 1000th episode Conan song about Conan. It's this song is called Zero. We don't know who that's about at all, right? So, like, I was, like, a little bit thrown by that. Like, I like Zero. I know he's very popular. We all like him. But, like, it's not called Detective Zero. But anyway... but now I'm like super curious to see what the opening is going to be like, the animation portion of it, with this new song. So
it's just, what do you call it? 58 seconds of Zero and 2 seconds of Conan at the end, just popping out. Yeah, I'm also still here.
Like, yeah, I mean, it's just Conan reacting to Zero in like many situations.
Two things, Kate. One, did it have everything you like? Because there was no train.
There was no train mystery. It's true. So, yeah. Unfortunately, they couldn't get trains into the story.
And did you also read the original manga chapters beforehand? Or no, that was a bridge too far.
I didn't go back and read the original manga chapters. That would be good. That would be a good third comparison. I do think that it also hinges a little bit on the character designs because they have the older, like the older character designs just have a different feel to them. And I think that that also adds a bit, you know, to that atmosphere. Not that I don't, I think that a new Conan I very much enjoy and can still definitely give me like, you know, give me chills at times. But yeah, it's just like, doesn't have that creepy atmosphere.
No, that's fair. I was just curious. I was like, did you do the trifecta?
I didn't. I should have. That would have been good.
There was one other new show, I guess. Well, it's kind of in between, but like it just came out. Like I watched it the day it came out on Netflix. So, and like I watched it and I was like, no, Kate, you don't have to watch this. Like, I know that we, whenever possible, like that both of us watch all the news shows so we can bounce off each other. But like, there was literally no reason to have Kate suffer through this series. I haven't watched it yet. Like, I didn't make her watch through that new Polygon Pictures, Pacific Rim anime, which is also apparently new on Netflix. But, I watched the first episode of High Rise Invasion. And the whole series was out, but I felt like I could stop. I was just like, oh, what's on Netflix anime-wise? And they were like, hey, Al, you should watch this new series called High Rise Invasion. It's a Netflix original anime. And I was like, all right, this kind of looks dumb, but maybe it's fun dumb. This girl, Yuri Honjo, she wakes up and she's on top of the skyscraper and she sees that all the skyscrapers around her are connected by these like chain link bridges to each other. In like, it's just like the whole city is these skyscrapers connected by chain link bridges. And then all of a sudden, like this dude in a mask with like an axe comes out and he's chasing like this office lady and like instead of being caught by him, she like jumps off the roof and splatters on the ground. And apparently, in this world, they're all these. There's like these people have been transported here and they're being hunted by people in masks. And, it turns out that Yuri's brother is also trapped in this world. We never meet him in the they like communicate a little bit over cell phone. And then there's like she meets like a maid in a one of the masks. And it turns out like the masks are like she eventually like cracks the mask of the maid. And she finds out like the people who have the masks are being like ordered. And if they like throw off the masks or the mask gets damaged, they're like forced to commit suicide. And there's like a sniper guy with the mask. And she meets two cops who are also transported there. And then when one of the cops sees that she's a hot young high school student, he kills the other cop so he can have her way with her. So he's like starts ripping her skirt and forces her to take off her top, and eventually she kills this guy and takes his gun but not his body armor.
Her brother is definitely a murderer in a mask, right?
Like that I'm suspecting, like this one sniper guy who's like who like kills the cop, but he also is a hard-blooded killer, and I'm suspecting you're right, and I think that what do you call it, sniper mask is her brother. We haven't seen that. I'm sure if you watch the
When
shitty
you say
show.
sniper mask, I'm actually only picturing Soge King, like every single time that you say it, just so you know.
It would be better that way, so I won't break you of that illusion, Kate. But yeah, no, I just was like, all right, so like we've already so now her skirt seems to be permanently ripped, and like this dirty cop like forced her to take off her skirt, her top, and so we could see her top, well, only in her bra. And then like he like lavaciously like unclenches the her front bra, and it's just like, all right, so it's just kind of like murder porn with like ogling this, you know, high school protagonist. Yeah, I'm like nothing about this show is like fun or. And it's just kind of unnecessarily twisted and in all the ways that just. It's also one of those shows that is like cheap like 80% of the time, and then like well animated on like one or two gruesome deaths, or like any time we're especially ogling her in ways that are like, ah, I see what you care about, show your budget and like your what you prioritize is very clear.
I'm getting like High School of the Dead vibes. That's like
Yeah.
all I could feel. Ugh, gross.
I mean, in a way, I don't think like Netflix flush money down the drain considering how
Oh,
well
I'm sure it will be popular.
High School of the Dead has done for Funimation. I mean, like, didn't we find out that like it's bizarrely profitable for like what people buy when they like buy animes on like airline flights? I remember finding out that like it does extremely well, that people will just like, because you know there's like video on demand for flights and people will inordinately buy High School of the Dead, which also means you're like, yep, on a plane, I'll buy High School of the Dead and watch that.
I do not remember this statistic, so I have no idea, but
I swear I remember learning that like it is like inordinately purchased. So like,
I mean, I don't know if it is anymore. I know it was
yeah.
like, you know,
Well,
it
at
at
the
the
time.
time, like, yeah, it was very, very popular. It was very, yeah, I think it was also one of those shows that was really, really popular on like PlayStation Network or something like that. You know who what we mean.
I do not think Netflix was dumb for buying it, but I have literally no interest in watching another episode of this show. And I was like, no, Kate, please, please, as your friend and someone who wants to continue to be your friend, do not watch this show because I did. I jumped on this grenade specifically because I didn't. And now I know you should not.
I appreciate that. I haven't watched something really, really heinous, I feel like, in a while. I say that, but I might have just put things out of my mind. Also,
No,
I can't remember anything now during pandemic times.
we just watched something that was horrible because I remember doing the like, what was worse? And I remember, like, the Devil's Three Way was Handshakers, the show that always wins about the incestuous twins, and the show we watched. And it wasn't worse than either of them, but it was still pretty bad. Because nothing we'll ever watch, hopefully, will ever beat that show about the, you know. Based on the visual novel with the incestuous twins. And do you remember what that show was? I never.
I mean, you can't think Project Scarred was that bad. That
No,
was.
no.
No,
It was.
okay.
It wasn't this season. It was like either last season or the season before that. That was like. Because I wouldn't ask you, was that show worse than Handshakers or the Twin Cess show? Like, that show was just like pretty boy fluffness.
Yeah, it was just boring.
Boring, but it wasn't like, was it worse than Handshakers? Like, you've gotta like really twist the knife. I'll put in the show notes which one it was.
Don't have show notes.
I'll put in the comments section which one it
Okay, yeah, if
was.
you figure it out, you know, I'm glad that whatever it was has not scarred me so badly that I've like completely forgotten it, basically.
Was that like Yoga to No Sora? Or I don't
I mean,
remember.
that's the one with like the creepy siblings,
Yes.
yes.
I asked, was it worse than Yoga to No Sora or Handshakers?
Right,
And
but
it
I'm
was,
saying the one, whatever you're thinking of, I
So I guess, yeah, it wasn't as scarring as those two shows, so, you know.
Thank goodness. We don't need any more of that. But I'm sorry that this one sounds pretty up there.
The longer we live without seeing a show worse than Yogan and Hosora, the happier I will be.
Remember that one about, like, the soda can girls or whatever?
Oh, yeah, no. That one was pretty wretched, too, but...
That was because the main character was so wretched in there. Anyway.
Let's I don't not remember go what that down was called memory either. Lane.
Yeah, let's not. This is the wrong memory lane that I want to go down. So I think we'll wrap up this episode with Legend of Hay. So this was a movie that both Al and I watched during the New York International Children's Film Festival. They had it on kind of on demand, I guess you could kind of say, this year, which honestly was so great and amazing. And I'm kind of spoiled now and really want them to continue to do that. So I watched a lot of things. And, but we're going to talk about Legend of Hay because it's like anime adjacent.
It's a Chinese animation, but it did come out simultaneously in China and Japan in, I think, 2019.
And it's based on a very, very popular webtoon of... not exactly the same name, but similar name. I think it's called The Legend of Lu Xiaohei is the webtoon. And so this movie is a prequel to that series. And so, yeah, I think it just felt like kind of adjacent. It's you know, in a vein that we're seeing more animation come out of China, and we're seeing, you know, these webtoons especially are getting bigger and bigger and starting to have animated versions and things. So it seemed like also after watching it, it just seems like something that anime fans will probably really enjoy, I think.
One quick question before we begin, which was, I know we had a little like chat about, or you had a little chat with my roommate. How hard was it for you? I had a hard time finding a lot of the voice actors in Japanese, Chinese, and English.
Japanese, I was able to find pretty easily. English was a lot of not big. They didn't get a big name cast for it, from what I understand. It was a lot of...
Apparently they had a lot of Chinese-American voice actors specifically to voice the characters. That much I did catch, but then they didn't list who any of them were.
Yeah, it didn't seem like a big production. In Japan, shocking to no one, amazing voice cast in Japanese. So, like, that, you know, it's so terrible, but, like, it's, like, makes me sound like such a weeb, but, like, I wish I could have watched it in either Chinese or Japanese instead of English. Obviously, I would rather watch it in Chinese, but, like, the Japanese voice cast, like, is so good that it's, like, unfair to everyone. Like...
All I remember was, like, the only name I found was Hana Kanazawa. She did Hei, the main character.
Stormind is Takahiro Sakurai, who is basically my absolute favorite. One of my absolute favorites. Love him so much. And Infinity is, forgetting his name off the top of my head right now, but he's Tamaki from, like, Host Club and, like, tons of other people. So, like, it's good. It's good. And I think and then, like, some of the smaller, like, ancillary characters are also, like, big name. Like, Japanese voice actors. Anyway, we're not talking about the Japanese version. I didn't even see it in Japanese. I saw a trailer. You know, this is a fantasy series. It has a lot of big fights in the movie and also some really, really beautiful animation, a lot of beautiful environments and backgrounds. So I think visually it was really, really stunning.
The story starts and we meet a little cat living in the forest, and a great disruption occurs, and he moves around, and eventually, when he is being attacked by some humans, after, you know, he gets dragged away from the city, dragged away from the forest into the city, we learn that he is not just a normal little cat, but he is a cat spirit. And is saved by some other spirits who take him in. And up until the other spirit saves him, it's completely wordless. We only ever just hear, you know, sound effects. And I think, do the guys who, the punks chasing the cat, did they even speak? Or they just, like, try to beat him up? I forget. No, it doesn't matter. And yeah, he's, you know, the character, the little cat spirit, who's Hay, is hesitant at first, but he's taken in by these band of spirits who become his friends. And then, just as he's kind of settling in with his new spirit friends, this superpowered human comes and attacks the group. Hay gets separated from his new friends. Superpowered human named Infinity seems to want to get the gang led by Stormend, who we mentioned before, and bring them all into the guild that he works for. And then it kind of becomes Infinity and Hay getting to know each other and maybe learning a little bit more about each other, and Hay, Stormend, and Infinity's relationship and what they're all their agendas are.
And I feel like past the point of Infinity and Hay kind of meeting, it becomes sort of a journey story. So there's like, you know, they're trying to get back first to civilization, and then once they do, they're trying to get back to a specific city, and there's a lot of journeying, and learning about, Hayes learning about his magical abilities during that time. So, I feel like, as I said, I think visually very, very stunning. I think sometimes the show was like too obsessed with its own look, where I was like, okay, I get it. It's beautiful. Can we like get going? I do feel like the movie was a little light on the plot.
Well, the thing I found was clunky was the beginning was interesting. Because I felt like, oh, all right, you're telling things wordlessly. That's cool. But, like, there's this weird middle part where it felt like things happened to happen. And part of it is them not wanting to reveal certain things and have them be surprises later on. But also part of it just seemed very clunky storytelling. Like a lot of the Hay becoming friends with Stormen's gang and then Infinity kind of taking Hay. Just, I don't know, the only way I could describe it when me and my roommate were watching it is things happen because they need them to happen. And like, it almost feels like you don't need a lot of expository dialogue, but you need I don't know, a little bit more linking. And they're like, when they finally do some of the big reveals, I felt like the story flowed a little better in like the last half and last third part. Like, I was definitely not feeling it as much. And then, like you said, I didn't realize it until you said it, but yeah, there does be some parts where like they're definitely much more obsessed with their style than their content. And I think that also didn't help me get into it. So I was a lot more positive by the end, but I feel like the beginning half did not do the series a lot of favors in that regard.
I think I'd agree with that. I think the beginning, I agree, I think is a little disjointed. I also think that Hay doesn't, to me, doesn't spend enough time with Stormund. Like I feel like he meets them and like is almost immediately separated from them. So like I didn't feel their connection as deeply as I felt like the story wanted me to believe that that connection had been established. So I think that I wish they had spent a little more time letting that relationship sort of grow a little bit more before like Infinity showed up and, you know, sort of upended things. I think that would have helped a bit. I also wondered, like, when I watched the film before looking up anything about it, so I didn't know that it was like this prequel to this story, you know? So I wonder also, you know, how much that sort of factored into what they were doing, where they're like, oh, you know, I don't know, I haven't read any of the webtoon, you know, I might go and, you know, see story-wise, you know, what kind of plot points might be brought up in there that are absent here. I'm kind of curious about that. Like, it gave me enough curiosity about the series, but I did feel like, oh, are they assuming that I might know these characters or know, you know, I think especially there's a bunch of characters near the end where I'm like, I felt like the story really thought I knew who that was. Like, or that I'd be like, that was a fun cameo, and I'm like, no clue who that was, but whatever.
So one thing I will know just from, oddly enough, Fate Grand Order, Nezha, the girl with the wheels on her feet, she has like the spear. She shows up at like the very end, and like everybody seems to know her. She's actually a deity from Buddhism and Hinduism. She's actually in both religions. So that's why they don't describe her, because she's just like a known mythological character. So I don't know how much that's true with some of the other ones.
That's a good point. And then like plot-wise, I felt like this is what I'm so curious about in the webtoon because there's like the contention in the story, right, is that humans and spirits now share the world. And continuously, so the story takes place like in the, you know, what would be like modern day. And so, you know, cities have built up and like the places where spirits once had like big forests to live in or like quiet spaces have been taken over by humanity. And so there's, you know, like some humans and some spirits are at odds, but not all of them. And so like there's some different factions. But I didn't feel like the series, like, I didn't feel like I understood what the series was trying to say about it because besides Infinity, basically we never, and like some rando like people they meet like for 5 seconds, humans do not appear in this story in any significant way. And so it's like, I didn't understand, like, one of the big things that they're trying to kind of figure out in the story is, like, should humans, or should spirits want to coexist with humans? Like, it's like, oh, spirits and humans, they should coexist, and, like, that would, you know, balance the world or whatever, right? But at no time, I felt like, in the movie, like, no, there is no human that does anything good. Like, there's nothing, like, there's why, I don't, like, I didn't get why spirits would want to, like, except for the fact that they were like, hey, smartphones are cool. And it was like, I just didn't feel like they made, like, a good argument for, like, I didn't see that humans were really doing anything for spirits and, like, helping them in any way. So I didn't understand why the spirits really, like, or some of the spirits, I should say, not all of them, but, like, why there was factions of the spirits who were like, we should, you know, live in cities with the humans. And I was like, but why? Like, what argument was there in the story for that?
Well, I got the feeling, it's not fully, that there's some kind of, like, it's supposed to be, like, a world of, like, urban fantasy with, like, because there's a definitely a, like, organization that upholds the masquerade that there are no spirits and it's only a select number of humans who work with the spirits to keep up this organization. But like you said, other than Infinity, there are no other significant humans, and we don't even meet any of the other humans in that organization. So, yeah, no, that is definitely a... And once again, maybe it's one of those things that's in the webtoon a lot more, but, I mean, it's a common refrain that, like, if you make a movie, it should stand on its own. I shouldn't have to go out and read the supplemental information to learn about. Plus, a lot of the big reveals revolve around not a lot of that information not being known. So, if you expect people to know it, then there are a lot of things that wouldn't come as a surprise. But if you do know it, yeah. So, but if you don't know it, then you're left with a lot of questions like you and me.
I'm not saying I was, like, advocating for the death of all humans, although, like, not against either. But I just didn't feel like the story made a good argument for, like, why the spirits who have, like, such power, right? Like, they're incredibly powerful beings, why they would be, like, wanting to coexist with humans who seem to only destroy their habitats. Like, I was like, I don't see why you would want be cool with them, and maybe there are great reasons, I just there didn't feel like they were there. And I think one of the other things that came up in the story, right, was like assimilation. Oh, you want me to assimilate, like that's and like now normally assimilation is bad, like that is something one should fight against. Now I'm not saying that means like you should murder everybody, obviously that is not you know, to prevent assimilation. But again, in the similar vein, like I was like really impressed by like the concept of assimilation being brought up and like how that also maps on to lots of things in our society and what we expect of indigenous people or other cultures that are being absorbed, right, by like gentrification or a city or war or whatever. But then I didn't feel like the story really addressed it. But again, then it might, maybe that's because the whole series is about it, you know, like the whole actual thing that this is a prequel to will all talk about all of those things. So I don't know, like, but I just felt a little like unsatisfied.
I will say that I did read that. Did you see how well this did?
I think it did very well.
Oh, yeah, broke all kinds of box office records in China. I think it did extremely well in Japan. They've already greenlit a second movie. I feel like it, I mean, apparently it did bingo bongo bucks, so a second movie is already in the works, so maybe that will be a little more fill in the gaps for you if you wanted to see that. But
I mean, that's good to know. Like I said, I do. I mean, I don't want to make it seem like this was not an enjoyable movie because I think that it was overall pretty enjoyable. I think a lot of people, like, I can understand why it would be popular. It has amazing fights. It looks amazing. Like, there's cool characters, you know, like.
it did give me a weird Steven Universe vibe at times, especially.
Oh, that's so funny because yeah, the person I was watching it with also said that like the voice, the English voice for the cat was like a little too Steven Universe.
Yeah, I look, because that's why I started looking up the English cast. I'm like, is this the Steven Universe voice actor? It wasn't, but. That was my first thought. Like the character designs and then the voice. I was like, did they see these character designs and go, all right, get the person who voices Steven Universe?
You were not the only person to think that, though. Yeah, I feel like, you know, I thought that it brought up some really interesting things, like thematically, that I was like, oh, I really wish they would have, you know, maybe addressed those things more. But at the same time, I think it's like a very entertaining film, and I can understand why it would like be very commercially successful, you know, like that totally makes sense to me. I think anime fans especially would like very much enjoy this, and like if there is more depth to be had, like I think that that would be, you know, appreciated. But it doesn't necessarily like have to have that. It's just something that I was looking for.
Well, also, I think it's worth noting that, like, all I can remember is, like, the last two or three animated films we've seen out of China at the International Children's Fest were all very well animated, but, like, every time we were like, what did we just watch story-wise? Like, the storytelling was, like, completely incomprehensible. This is a major step up that we're like, all right, the first third was clunky, but like by the end I figured out what was generally going on, and like I was like, all right, that had a beginning, middle, and end that I understood. Even when it's clunky, I at least knew what was happening every step of the way. I just wish it was a little smoother, or maybe they focused more on certain things, but it wasn't like, wait, what? Who? Huh? Who?
I
What?
know, I was actually, I can't remember the name of the film, and I think we reviewed it either on the podcast or like on the blog, but I remember it was beautiful, and like three quarters of it was great, and then the ending was so out of nowhere. We were just like, what happened? Why did you think this should be the end? Like, I can't remember the movie, but yeah, I definitely was having similar conversations, Al. I think people would be very impressed by this movie, and like, I didn't appreciate that they were like, also I think there were expectations based on sort of how this film was introduced. But first of all, I felt like they were like Ghibli-esque environmental themes, and I just think it's a little light. It's more of a fighty magic movie and not like a thoughtful environmental message. So, you know, just take that out of your pitch a little bit, like, and then, you know, then maybe it works a little better.
Not to be cynical, but I just wonder how much pitching, like, it just seems like it would play well with the New York International Children's Film Festival audience to pitch it that way.
Absolutely. And but I think that is maybe also one of the reasons why I was talking about the things that I was and thinking about those things in a more deep way that like wasn't addressed. So I was like, but I don't know if I would have been thinking those things if it was like, oh, it's like an action adventure. You know, not that those things can't have depth, but just different expectations. Anyway, I don't know if this is getting a wide US release.
Yes, it was licensed by
Okay.
Shout Factory.
Great. So I think that, you know, if this makes it onto Netflix or something like that, I don't know if it'll get any like further theatrical release in current times.
Shout Factory has its own streaming platform.
Oh, okay. Well then, I think people should check it out. Like it I feel like I think you'll be impressed, especially by the animation quality of this movie. And, you know, I will see if the webtoon is available in English. I would watch the next movie, I feel like. I would check it out. All right, so that wraps up another episode of the Speakeasy Podcast. Like I said at the beginning, we're already looking ahead at the new season of anime, so I'm sure that we'll be making an appearance soon on the podcast, and of course we'll be wrapping up shows. So get any requests in for new shows or shows we should finish and talk about, and we'll see you next month.
Bye-bye, guys and gals and everybody else.